Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
What the progressive saw was an unparalleled opportunity to sow chaos and to push for their vision of essentially, let's cut through the nice language, a culturally Marxist society.
Author, columnist, managing editor of LibertyNation.com, podcast host and conservative policy advocate.
We dismiss history at our peril.
Liberty Nation with Mark Angelides.
If you haven't tried Super Beet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Super Beet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Super Beets Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com, and when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
With a president of the same party as the Senate to advance the nomination. And we will certainly do that this year. This Senate is in current Senate, elected the last time in 2018, will be here till the end of the year, and the president will be here till January 20th.
But do you understand why many Americans view this as a double standard?
I can only repeat that we have an obligation under the Constitution, should we choose to take advantage of it, to fill the vacancy, and I assure you that's very likely to happen.
Yeah, it's not a double standard. It's just the constitutional process. I mean, it's like flipping Dumb and Dumber out here. Hi, welcome to the show, Dana Lash. It's crazy. We got a, what is it? We have a press conference from the president tonight at about 6. What else is there? We've got a nomination. The nomination is going to be announced. This is all Eastern time. Saturday at 5 Eastern. And you have the Supreme Court Justice, late Justice, in repose today and tomorrow. You have all kinds of action happening in the Senate. There's just a lot of moving pieces to go over, and I want to start with some of that. If you make sure you check out danalash.com. In fact, find me here.
Find Dana at DLash on Twitter and Instagram, Dana Lash on Parler and YouTube, official Dana Lash on Facebook, and simulcast via the First, channel 244 on Pluto TV.
There's just nothing better than like old Bob Barker game show-esque music. Really, there's just nothing better. All right, so if you sign up for the newsletter, which I suggest you do, I sent some stuff out just a little earlier this morning has to do with all of the latest as it relates to the Supreme Court, like the leading nominees. I'm not looking at every single one of them. I'm honestly looking at the ones that he's most likely to pick from. And please know that when I'm, because at one time or another, I'm going to be writing about someone you love, and I'm going to do so in a manner that is just very honest, because you kind of have to be with this. And I looked at Amy Coney Barrett and Barbara Lagoa the same way. So I have, that's the latest, that's the newsletter that went out this morning. So we're going to get into that. And I'm also going to look into some polling, because Colorado is really troubling to me. Colorado was just moved this morning to toss up to leans Dem. It's lean. I don't think Cory Gardner is going to make it out. And one of the reasons I say this is because here's the problem. There's not a lot of polling coming out of Colorado. And I know, so I was talking to some friends of mine, and they said, well, there's internal stuff that people are working with that they're not making public. And I don't think that Trump's doing well in Colorado. And you have to also remember that Colorado's demographic has changed dramatically over the last decade. And as a result of this, this state has been trending blue for quite some time. And Trump is behind in the state, but the last survey that we have shows Biden is leading. This plus the Supreme Court stuff, these are two really bad variables that just make a really, really bad sum for Cory Gardner, the embattled Republican incumbent who's going for his second term. So that was moved from toss up to leans Dem. Now, I'm most concerned about Arizona and Colorado. And I'm looking ahead even after the Supreme Court fight. And I'm also, there's parts of Texas that I'm very concerned about, including Texas Congressional District 24. And we're going to be talking a little bit more about that later on this week, some of the congressional districts, because you want to make sure that we have enough power in the House that we can kind of blunt some of the stuff that House Democrats are going to be doing. They control the power of the purse. So to that effect, like I said, a lot of stuff to touch on today. So we're going to start with these some of these candidates. Mitch McConnell's refusing to. He's saying, look, I think that he's holding his cards close to his chest, which is smart. I think this is nothing more than just smart gamesmanship from Mitch McConnell. And I hope that people do not allow yourselves to get baited and your enthusiasm thwarted because you see a headline that's purposefully designed to make you upset about certain lawmakers. And I think that's what some of the stuff is with Mitt Romney. This is just gamesmanship. And I think that he's being incredibly smart about this. And he's just keeping his cards close to his chest. They're trying to make it to where they're doing this. Here we have, it's not even 40 days out from the election. And this is going to be tough. And this, they're going to push through. Depending on who they pick, I think that going without a hearing only works if it's like one particular. I think going without a hearing only works really if it's Amy Coney Barrett. And even then, I still want a hearing. Anyone else, I would not be able to get on board with not having a hearing at all whatsoever, because there are certain questions that I want to see asked, because some of them, quite frankly, just don't have that breadth of, for the lack of a better way to put it, judicial review or cases on which they've overseen to, I think, fully inform the constituency as to where they're going to fall down on certain issues that have to do with our constitutional rights. So Democrats are trying to, this is what I love. I love the CNN headline, because who told you this? I did. You're welcome. Democrats are trying to figure out how to handle Trump's potential Supreme Court pick after that last flap over Amy Coney Barrett's faith. So Democrats got themselves in a lot of trouble where they tried to handmaiden tail her. And that just looked so stupid. And it even turned off some independent, particularly suburban female independents, were a little bit like, that's really creepy that you guys just did that. And so as a result, Democrats, they got their hands slapped. They have no idea how to go about this, because first off, she'll kick you in the throat. Number one. Number two, I mean, she's got seven kids. She's literally like the demo you guys are, Democrats are trying to go after. So they have to spurn what Republicans, if they play the smart, turn into the avatar of this demo. I mean, it's like for someone like me, who I love the operative aspect of this and the narrative aspect of this and that whole bag. It's like a dream come true. It really is. It's the narrative fight that I love. This is Amy Coney Barrett, by the way. I have to say, first off, don't play this yet. Let me set it up. One of my favorite stories, if you want to get into legal history and judicial history, one of my favorite ever stories is that of John Adams. And I've told you about this story before. I think I've even told you during our lockdown saga. It is one of the best. John Adams, when he had to defend, not had to, he chose to, because he saw an amazing opportunity in the United States, this fledgling claim of a colony, of these colonies forming the more perfect union. And after the Boston Massacre, and after Crispus Attucks was shot and killed by redcoats, and there was a mob, like a legitimate one, with actual torches and pitchforks, like real ones, and they were going after the redcoat, and they were mad, and they were like, come at us, bro. And the redcoats were like, and the head red coat was like, not yet, bros. Not totally like that, but you get the idea. And so one ended up firing a shot, kills Crispus Attucks, the first death in the American War, the War of Independence. And John Adams steps up to defend it, because he's like, what claim does America have on due process, forming a more perfect union on these principles, if we're going to immediately violate these principles right out of the gate? We would not have been able to have a United States of America without John Adams, and without this case in particular. And he put it all on the line. He had a wife, young little kid. I think his wife was even pregnant. I mean, it's crazy. And he put everything on the line. And he was so good. And he argued his point so well that he even won over the colonists, which is amazing. And this was even when you had all of the gossipy, you know, little handbills and stuff that they would push out because everybody would talk smack about each other. I mean, it was amazing. And Amy Coney Barrett cites this in this remark.
John Adams put aside personal preferences. He stood up to public pressure and he did his duty. And moreover, he did it to the best of his ability. He didn't do his grudging, minimal best. He did his absolute best, and the captain was acquitted, and most of the soldiers were, and those who were not escaped the death penalty. Now, John Adams did these things as a lawyer, but adhering to duty in the face of a contrary personal or political preference, and in the face of public pressure to the contrary, has particular resonance for the job of a judge. A judge is obligated to apply the law as it is and not as she wishes it would be. She's obliged to follow the law even when her personal preferences cut the other way, or when she will experience great public criticism for doing so.
I love this. That was great. I love it. How do you not love that? So that brings us to one of the other big discussions. Which one of these nominees, which one of these potential nominees stands out? Now, I talked a little bit about this yesterday. I alluded to this fight that it's not a fight, actually. It's just a discussion. There's no animosity. There's no maliciousness. No one's like pouncing. It's just because I think that we can all safely say that the individuals of whom we're speaking are all fairly conservative. I mean, the top three females, I think, are pretty conservative in terms of they are constitutionalists. So I was checking out this piece over at Politico this morning, and it's discussing the two biggest factions on the right. You have the folks that are behind Barbara Lagoa, and that is a lot of Florida operatives. And obviously, you have Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. You have Congressman Matt Gaetz. They like the idea of Barbara Lagoa. They say she's a Cuban American jurist from a state that Trump's got to win, and they think that that's even. And I think Trump is he's doing pretty well in Florida. He's leading Biden with Hispanics, but it's close. And I have a problem with that, though, but I'm going to come back the way that they're pitching this. And then you have some other individuals, Tony Perkins, and I prefer Amy Coney Barrett, who like Barrett. And the reason I say this is because I like the breadth of cases that she has written opinions on. Now, here's my problem with this whole situation, with the way that this is being framed. First off, operatives are saying that, you know, don't bypass Lagoa because the president could miss an opportunity to bolster his chances in Florida. Well, why would getting behind Lagoa have anything to do with that? Because she's Cuban American. So first off, I reject the framing that this article over at Politico has, pragmatist versus purist, but I cannot stand, and I say this respectfully because I like everybody involved, but I'm going to be right out with you. I think that this is a case of the right gambling the Constitution at the expense of identity politics, and I'm sorry, but that's not what we do. We don't sit here, and I'm going to tell you something, if we are so damn at a loss that we have to play politics with the Supreme Court of the United States, then honestly, let's let the sweet meteor of death hit us now. I'm ready. And I'm not even joking. Because this is one election, but I'll be damned if I have to go through generations of Roberts-esque stuff, right? I am not doing that. Are you up for doing that? Or do you want to gamble and risk? I'm not saying Lagoa is like John Roberts, but we don't know a lot about her. And I'm going to discuss what we do know and what we don't know of each of them coming up. If you haven't tried Superbeet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Superbeet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Superbeet Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Superbeet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com, and when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
Catch the latest Dana podcasts, videos, and blog posts at the all-new DanaRadio.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So the New York Post has a story of how the Louisville cop at the Breonna Taylor raid is defending his actions, and he's slamming the people out rioting. The Louisville Metro Police Department Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly, one of three officers that was the March 13th raid, he sent an email to his colleagues at 2 a.m. ahead of the grand jury decision. First off, sidebar, why in the hell are any of you people sending emails out? What in the ever-loving hell is wrong with you? Have you never seen an episode of Law & Order? You know all of this is going to come out. Why do you do this? Okay, back to the article. It was obtained by who else but Vice. The people who were like, we love drugs, but not sure about guns. He says it's sad how good guys are demonized and criminals are canonized. And that's true. He said that I know we did the legal, moral, and ethical thing that night. And then he slammed the rioters. And this all had to do with a no-knock warrant. All the people protesting this, by the way, who were like, no-knocks are bad. Tell me how, reconcile that with your support for red flag laws, because they incorporate that too. What? I can't hear you. I just hear crickets of hypocrisy, which would be a great band for like a bunch of librarians, right? Who would just like, just, you know, I'm just thinking out loud. Moving on down the line here. CDC is trying to ruin your life. They say that more Halloween guidelines warn against typical trick-or-treating. You're just supposed to ping people in the head with candy from across your property. I'm just like, you know, I think that sounds about right. They say there are many traditional ways celebrating Halloween. They say that it's high risk to go door to door where kids get treats. And they say that how about you just carve a pumpkin in your home and have an outdoor costume party? Or this is my favorite, just you can go to a party, but stay 6 feet away from all people. Haunted houses are out. Haunted forests are in. What? That's actually not so bad. They say that apple picking and pumpkin patches, he used hand sanitizer and then touch all the pumpkins. I don't know, all kinds of. But the trick-or-treating, I mean, come on. Come on, guys. Bed Bath & Beyond is going to close 63 stores by the end of 2020 after announcing plans to shutter 200 locations and slash 2,800 jobs over the next 2 years. I have no idea where I'm going to get the stuff that I don't need for my kitchen. I have no idea how this is going to happen. This coming out of Boston, an Arlington fourth grader was sent home from school because he sneezed. A father in Arlington said his 9-year-old son was sent home from Bishop Elementary because he sneezed. The fourth grade student was told he could not return until he gets a negative coronavirus test. Said the student, I sneezed twice and the teacher told me to go to the nurse. I mean, it couldn't be allergies or anything, but hey, science. Stick with us because I'll tell you the difference between Barbara Lagawa and Amy Coney Barrett. Keltec is a privately owned family company that has been making one-of-a-kind American-made firearms since 1995. They believe in respect for you and myself and our fellow citizens and the right to bear arms and in the love that we all have for our great country. All innovative Keltec firearms are proudly and quality made right here in America. Every Keltec employee, regardless of their role, is encouraged to innovate, to find better ways to make things efficiently with quality in mind. The Keltec commitment to innovation and quality and George Kellgren's dedication to the quality of life for each employee truly sets them apart from any firearms manufacturer I've had the pleasure of knowing. The new affordable P17 pistol from Keltec makes range days a lot less expensive and far more fun. It's lightweight, easy to handle, and features a fiber optic front sight and adjustable rear. Affordable at an MSRP of only $199, the P17 gives you a lot more bang for the buck. Check them out at KeltecWeapons.com. That's KeltecWeapons.com.
Check out all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on official Dana Lash on Facebook, YouTube.com/The Dana Show, or Channel 244 on Pluto TV.
But we Democrats are fighting as hard as we can to protect Americans. And we need Americans to
stop lying to the people.
Jesus saves! Jesus saves!
Stop lying to the people!
Jesus loves you guys!
Thank you. Democrats are fighting as hard as we can to protect Americans.
What
but we
is
need
this?
Americans to continue
like
to
random
fight
interruptions?
Us.
Where are they? It's like they're putting on a play. God. That's Chuck Schumer. What is apples for sale? I mean, what else are they going to have?
Jesus saved.
Right? Breaking news. what other kind of interruptions are they going to have? So it's like a cutscene from Newsies. That's what it was. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash. We're dying right now because I don't know if we can play it yet because it's got to get.
Does it have to be?
Yeah, we have to put a censor diaper on it because some words are no-no words and some words can't be said on public airwaves because the no-no-ness of them offends people.
Aww.
See, I'm a free speech purist and I will make fun of that also. The video in question, Andy Ngo took video of Portland. What was happening on Portland last night? They had Antifa rioters that tried, I guess, their bestest to do a mosh pit in the middle of Burnside Street and in front of the police building, one of the precincts there, and they shut down the street. And I was looking at it, and let me set this up. I've been to I don't know how many concerts, and whether it's Ozfest or I've been to concerts where, and again, germaphobe here, I don't like getting into the pit because in my head I'm like 6'8" and I weigh 300 pounds, but in my mind my reality I'm very well aware of reality. I'm 5'6" and anywhere from 125 to 130. So I, you know, believe. Yeah, a little different. And I'm also a germaphobe. So I'm like, ew, don't touch me. I don't like intimacy like that. I'm joking. So the whole thing with mosh pit, I've seen crazy mosh pits before where it's like a tsunami of people and your reality is momentarily suspended. And then you look at your friends and yell, try to get out. My favorites are, because it's always dudes. It's always crazy dudes. And it's just total chaos because that's the point. And my favorite is when you get chicks that try to get in it and they end up getting just totally knocked down. I mean, not on purpose, but it's like you just don't, unless you can hold your own in the pit, don't get in it, right? It's like, just don't get in the pit unless you can hold your own in the pit. And you always got some, like, you know, female lunchbox out there who's like, I'm going to be able to hold my own. And man, she's knocked down to the ground. It's just so my point is that I have seen, and I think that it stopped in the year 2000. I've seen mosh pits. Kane has seen mosh pits before. Steve, have you ever been to a concert where there's a mosh pit? Okay, so they're not like the video we're about to discuss, correct? Like, at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. So this is like Fisher Price mosh pit. I don't know how else to put it. So Andy Ngo has this video of Antifa rioters dancing in a mosh pit. First off, it's the most ironic thing I've ever seen in my life because they're not moshing. They're jumping, whatever, to Rage Against the Machine, which could you be more cliched? And I will make fun of Tom Morello's overuse of the wah pedal. And you can send me all the hate email you want to. And I'll print it out and I'll shoot at it at Texas Gun Experience. But they decide they were going to I don't know. God love them. They called it a mosh pit and it's not. They're just like, I mean, I've seen like the floating bubbles when I clean the toilet do more moshing than this. I just, they don't even, do they not know what it is? And then there's like one guy who is like really, I think he's got a gas mask on.
I've moshed harder in the grocery line. Look at that.
Oh my gosh, I mosh harder than this every day. This is not what this is. This is like not even the equate version of a mosh
pit.
It's
like they're dancing on hot sand. Like the sand is hot and they just have to, it's a little hot. It's just hot
sand. I forgot what song it is that they're.
Killing in the Name
of. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we will do what you tell us. We will do what you tell us. We will do what you tell us. I mean, it's the most ironic thing ever.
They're raging
for the machine. The cogs are like, yes, more machine. More machine, please. That's what they're doing. Let's be real. I've never seen people like who want that so badly before. Oh, man, you cannot make fun of this enough.
Oh,
there is no limit as to how hard you can make fun of this. And I love how they're like, let me check on my things. We're anarchists and we don't believe in private property, but this is my stuff. Set it here on the edge. Oh, man, it's just funny. It's just so funny. I'm watching this and I'm just cracking up. It is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Categorize it as a mosh pit, though, is just That's fake news.
Yeah, it's a fake, mosh pit.
Fake news
is like, imagine. You remember that scene? I'll bring the tugboat in. Do you remember that scene from Dances with Wolves where they find the Tatanka, the buffalo, right? Yeah, yeah. And there's like a stampede and it's crazy. And you're like, oh my gosh, they're totally for real going to kill Kevin, what's his face, Costner. They're totally actually going to run him over with these buffalo. And it's crazy and there's dust and it's just total chaos and up is down, everywhere, sideways is down, everything's crazy. That's kind of what it's like in an actual mosh pit. Imagine like a stampede of mini humans. Right. And that's what it's like.
There's a good percentage you could get hurt.
Oh, no, you will get hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a guarantee. You will get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, some can handle it better than others, but.
Some are like, yeah, that's no big deal. And then others lay on the ground and cry.
Not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, no, it's not. No, it's not.
Like we see in that video.
No, it's not like this. So, and, you know, it's just so funny to me. It cracks me up. Okay, all right. We got to get some serious stuff now. Serious things. So as we were talking about before we went to break, I have a preference of the front runners. And I wrote this morning when I sent the newsletter out, we got into some of this because I don't think the right's divided. And I think we have some good choices, but you have some choices that you would like to see more so, I think, than some others. And I know that some political operatives in Florida, and I know the governor of Florida and Congressman Matt Gaetz, they're pushing for Barbara Lagoa. But I think that I personally, and you can come to your own conclusion, I think Amy Coney Barrett is the best choice at this particular time. And I just recoil anytime, even when Republicans do it, and I understand that you're trying to be a tactician. I cannot stand identity politics. And I also understand Trump needs to win Florida. But if you think it all comes down to, well, we have to have a Cuban American from Florida to get on the Supreme Court or we're going to lose everything, then we're already screwed. I mean, it shouldn't, no one person and no one position should have that much influence. If it all hinges on that, then, well, screw us, bring on the sweet meteor of death. But it's just identity politics, and you cannot gamble the generations for one election. Even though it's the most important election, you cannot lose that opportunity. And so I say this, and this is nothing negative towards Barbara Lagoa. We just know more about Amy Coney Barrett. Now, I think that Lagoa has more judicial experience, but I think that Barrett has a wider breadth of cases ranging from the Second Amendment to due process and sexual assault on campus, Fourth Amendment, whereas Lagoa does not. And the closest that I could find to where Barbara Lagoa stands on Second Amendment issues was her response to a Feinstein query wherein she was answering about, and she just kind of deferred. And I get it because that's kind of, you know, that's customary. You're not going to try to undermine or take a different stance from higher ranked jurists. I get that. However, she played it really, really close to the vest. And you don't really have a lot to go on to figure out where she kind of stands on that issue. Now, she's been a member of the Federalist Society since 1998. So that's, you know, I mean, you're not a member of the Federalist Society for that long, you know, and not be a conservative. And I get that. But I just know more about Amy Coney Barrett. Now, Lagoa was on the 11th Circuit. Amy Coney Barrett was on the 7th Circuit. She also clerked for Antonin Scalia, late Justice Scalia, and she's considered his ideological heir. She is, I think what I have some of her cases linked, like for instance, she argued that felony dispossession for nonviolent felons is an abridgment of the Second Amendment. This was a mail fraud case, Cantor v. Barr, which I've linked in the newsletter. And she's also staunchly defended the Fourth Amendment and Rainsberger v. Brenner or v. Benner. So, I mean, you got a really good insight from her opinions on that. As I said, Lagoa has been a member of the Federalist Society. She backed DeSantis's suspension of failed and defeated Broward coward Scott Israel. She wrote the unanimous court decision that affirmed the state Senate's responsibility to make ultimately the final determination. And like I said, I don't doubt that she's a conservative. I just think that Barrett has been able to establish a background more indicative of her originalist views, a little bit that better informs us as to how she'll uphold the Constitution more so than Lagoa. Now, Alison Jones Rushing is another potential contender. When I spoke with Jeanine Pirro yesterday, Pirro brought her up, Judge Jeanine. Rushing is associated with Alliance for Defending Freedom, great organization. I believe that Rushing's a conservative, but I like her. I want her to stay on the list for future consideration, but I feel like she needs more experience before consideration. And that's not, I'm not at all saying that as a slight. I'm simply noting that she is an entire decade younger with a decade less of experience than either Amy Coney Barrett or Lagoa. And just because someone is a conservative and someone is with the right organizations and has, you know, on other issues, it does not necessarily mean that they're going to come down a certain way on like Fourth Amendment issues, for instance, or Second Amendment issues, because there were, remember, I mean, I've seen Republican lawmakers collapse on due process where it relates to red flag laws when they get the national spotlight on them. So you got to be really careful with this stuff. And like I said, I don't want to gamble identity politics. Now, Trump has already met with Barrett earlier this week. He's meeting with Lagoa on Friday. And I haven't heard whether or not he's meeting with Russia. Rushing. I think it's going to be, and that's Allison Jones Rushing. I think it's going to be Amy Coney Barrett. There are a lot of people pulling for her, and I also understand his need to keep Florida. I recoil, and I'm absolutely allergic to identity politics, especially with something like this. I don't know how Lagoa would come down on Second Amendment issues. And if you go with someone who is unproven, you are going to see a longer timeline, because I will be one of the many conservatives out there absolutely demanding a hearing. You are damn right, because this is a Supreme Court position. This person, some of my audience, this next nominee will outlive some members of my audience. The next nominee, the next person sitting on the Supreme Court, will be determining things when I am old and, you know, my kids are coming up. Well, they'll be old, but they'll be on the Supreme Court for life. So you got to really think about the weight of all of this. We have more to come as well. Alyssa Milano called 911 because she went from defund the police to defend me police. We're going to have that. The senators, there are Democrat senators who are mad about the Wuhan coronavirus bill, but they blocked it. They're mad about moving forward on the Supreme Court stuff, but they blocked the, because they said we should be worrying about the coronavirus. You blocked the relief bill. We've got that and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. You don't want to miss a single bit of it.
Hi, I'm Sarah Carter, host of the Sarah Carter Podcast. Everywhere you look these days, we're seeing an aggressive effort to destroy what made America great, tearing down our history, attacking our freedoms, and canceling any person who dares to cross the progressive speech police. We cannot stand by and let this happen. It's time for the silent majority to become the unsilent majority. Join me on the Sarah Carter Podcast. Subscribe at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
A higher caliber of talk. Get Dana on demand through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right, DanaLash.com. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry are calling on voters to reject hate speech. Did you hear about that? It's a new, these people popped up in my timeline. I'm like, the heck? Like, he's a member of the royal family, right? I don't know who this chick is. Just because I don't read Us Weekly all the time. Says Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are urging Americans to vote this November, saying that the country must reject hate speech and misinformation. Every 4 years, we're told the same thing, that this is the most important election of our lifetimes, says Markle, the Duchess of Sussex. Really? But this one, it's vital we reject hate speech. Now, I know that they did pop up because they've been going after Facebook, because Facebook allows Trump ads, and apparently that's hate speech. So pretty sure they're socialist Marxists. And they're like, we can't have hate speech except for ours. By the way, I just want to make this point. We had a war making entirely irrelevant the opinions of the British royal family on American political matters. And let's check my notes. Oh, yeah, that still applies. Still applicable. Still there, guys. Yeah, we don't. Oh, no, no, no. You are a descendant of King George. No, we're not. I just for added effort, I just don't really care what an exiled spare and a briefcase girl from Deal or No Deal have to say about American politics. I just don't.
No deal.
Yeah, no deal. I don't even know how that's played. Is Bob Barker hosting? If Bob Barker's not involved, no.
Howie Mandel.
No. No, it's either Drew Carey or Bob Barker for me, man. That's it. Or Steve Harvey, because I love Steve Harvey, because he's hysterical. And that's it. Nobody else matters. Everybody can get out. Nobody else matters. They should just host everything. No one else can host anything but them. Bob Barker's still alive, right? Please tell me he is. I think he is. We'll just pretend. Don't tweet me. Don't tell me if he's not. I don't want to know, because 2020 is already just awful. Don't. Oh, yay! My favorite was in Happy Gilmore when he punched Adam Sandler. It was amazing. All right, folks. We have a lot more on the way. Coming up, we're going to talk to, my friend Glenn Jacobs, Knox County Mayor. You remember him. He was a wrestler. We're going to talk to him coming up. We're also going to get into the latest peak 2020, Marxism, RBG, all of it. Stay with us. What makes Patriot Mobile different? Simply put, it's their exceptional customer satisfaction. People are attracted to Patriot Mobile because they listen to your needs and share the same values. Members stay with Patriot Mobile because, as America's only Christian conservative wireless service provider, Patriot Mobile is humbled to have achieved the highest customer satisfaction amongst all wireless companies. And as always, Patriot Mobile continues to donate to organizations in which you believe. For example, this month they're donating to Faith Wins, an organization helping to mobilize churches nationwide to get out the vote. Patriot Mobile doesn't just say they support these important causes, they're walking the walk. All plans include unlimited talk and data with commitment-free plans to fit any budget. Call the U.S.-based team at 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. Use promo code Dana for a free phone or free month of service, free activation, and a free gift. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Make the switch today to Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile. Their plans, your freedom.
Support from the people also.
Have you made a decision and you're just going to reveal it on Saturday? Or
I would say that I'm very close to making a decision in my own mind, and I'm going to reveal it on Saturday. And I'm doing that out of respect for Justice Ginsburg. You're having a service on Thursday, so I didn't really want to do anything to cut into the service. And we have a lot of time.
That is the president who's discussing his upcoming announcement, his decision for the Supreme Court, his pick for nominee. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, and you can find me, Kane.
Find Dana at D Lash on Twitter and Instagram, Dana Lash on Parler and YouTube, official Dana Lash on Facebook, and simulcast via the First, channel 244 on Pluto TV.
I mean, it's really great. I love it. Yeah, I'm all about that. Again, it's our Bob Barker game show music. Nobody can come on down. Because we're in our hobbit holes. All right. So a couple of things. We're going to talk more about the Supreme Court, that pick. And we're also going to get into, just give you a quick rundown. I got a lot of stuff still for y'all. I got some peak 2020 for you. I got some Melissa Milano going from defund the police to defend me police. But first and foremost, everybody needs to be praying for Louisville right now. So the word is out. Apparently the National Guard has been activated, and that's something that takes place about an hour before. I think it was supposed to happen an hour before. This is what I've been looking at from verified accounts on journalists and networks and local media and all of this stuff. So apparently it's expected any time. So there's going to be a curfew this evening, a 9 p.m. curfew this evening ahead of this grand jury report on Breonna Taylor's death. And there is and this is all coming down to the Kentucky AG, Daniel Cameron. And we're going to get into all of this. We'll follow it as well. That what they're doing is they're presenting their findings today in this ongoing case. And you remember that Breonna Taylor was the woman. She was a medical worker. She was during a no-knock warrant. It was a narcotics investigation back in March. There were officers who entered her home, and I think it was her boyfriend who responded because it was in the middle of the night, and he thought somebody was breaking in, I guess, and he fired, and then officers fired back, and they returned fire, and she ended up being hit and killed. Now, this is what, here is the question legitimately that I do have, is how, because they just, they had a, what was it, $12 million that they did a settlement with the family. They had a there was like a $12 million settlement with the family in all of this. And I think my, and that was from the city of Louisville. And I think, and I'm just asking this because I don't understand the process and the procedure. How does that happen before you have like what this grand jury is going to find? Like, that's what I don't understand. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not at this particular point, like passing judgment right at this second. I'm trying to figure out the process for this. I've never seen that before.
Civil and criminal. Like, this would be the civil decision and the criminal decision is still to come.
Well, I mean, the way that I understand it, they're presenting their report on it. So they're looking at, and I think that's what we're going to find out in this report, if they've, you know, when they've reviewed the conduct and the response, because it was the police sergeant, there was a detective, and then there was another detective, because this isn't, they didn't have a trial. They're trying to figure out if they're going to indict them. So that's what this is. They haven't had a trial yet. Right. There's no, they're trying to figure out if they're going to indict them. And they could consider, there's like 4 degrees of homicide that they could consider, and it could be from, you know, murder to reckless homicide. So that's my question, is because they had a settlement with the family that was $12 million. And I just have not been aware, even before you have really, you know, of the findings that are reported. So that's the kind of the question that I have with
us. Wouldn't the outcome of that influence the outcome of the actual criminal investigation?
Look, all I know, and I'm going to speak honestly here for a moment, most people do not follow these things day to day, unless you're like a couple of my family members. And then anytime that there is like a big story involving a case, and you need some people at home who are good cold case detectives, you know, at home, or other types of detectivery, then they're in it. But most people, that's what their hobby, you know, like I shoot guns and I knit. I work with sharp things. That's, you know, that's their hobby. And but most people, you know, don't follow that every day. Like I don't, you know, I don't follow every single, I will go, I know when I'm talking about something and I will research it and I will have so much information that it's redundant when I come to you and I start talking to you about it. But most people, they're busy, right? Y'all are busy. I mean, especially those of you who are juggling the online, the distance learning at home. I mean, my gosh, that's tough. So if you were selected or you were following this trial or you were selected to be on a, you know, a jury for a trial for like something like this, and you knew that there was a $12 million settlement already, I would immediately think, well, they really must, they're just admitting guilt, right? That's how I would think. And that's, so that's where I have a lot of questions about that, because I didn't know. I didn't know that that's how it worked, or it could work that way. So as I said, this, and I'm following all of this, and when we have it, you'll have it. But apparently the grand jury there in Louisville, they're going to be coming out with the findings, the report, and they're, The attorney general is holding a news conference. It's 1:30 p.m. Eastern, so it's actually going to be in probably about 15 minutes. And we will go to that when we do have that, because I want to hear the information as you do as well. And I have
Mayor Greg Fisher talking about a countywide 72-hour curfew.
Yes, listen to this, because they activated the guard already. Listen.
My third executive order sets a countywide 72-hour curfew from 9 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. beginning tonight. The curfew does not apply to people in the community to work, going to and from work, houses of worship for services, or those seeking medical attention for themselves.
So, seriously, though, seriously, pray for Louisville, though. I really hope y'all do, because it's I don't know how it's going to play out, but I do know this, that there is a lot of divisive entities out there that are absolutely, they are paid to foment division and to incite and do everything. Because I've seen it in my hometown of St. Louis. I know for a fact that people have. And again, I'll say, some of y'all have heard me say this before, but I remember when this was during the Mike Brown stuff. And this was during the Mike Brown stuff. And there were people who were brought in from Chicago and elsewhere, and they were paid to be there and to protest, quote unquote, peaceful protest. And they ended up not getting paid. And so they staged a protest out during the day outside of formerly known as ACORN. But then they're like the Missouri Organizing for Reform or whatever, called MORE. They just changed their name, and they stood outside of their office, and they had a protest that was covered by local media, and they trended "cut the check" on Twitter. That hashtag trended on Twitter. It was one of the top 10 trends, and they trended that because they were mad that they were not getting paid to go and protest and do all this stuff in Ferguson. That actually happened. So Google it. So don't tell me that it doesn't happen, because it happened in my hometown. I've seen it, and there's tons of news coverage of it, and they've admitted it. So there are entities out there that pay this. And by the way, some of the money that came into MORE, that was from a Soros funded entity. So it's not to say to exclude that from any discussion is to not have a frank and honest discussion. And it's not informative to the viewer or listener. So that being said, we're going to continue to watch this. Any developments that come in, we will have it. And we'll also, 1:30 is when they're going to have that press conference. The grand jury is set to make that announcement on whether they're going to indict these three Louisville police officers. And this has been more than 6 months after she was shot and killed. Or if they are going to, if they're going to be free, if they're going to just let them go. And so if they're going to indict them or they're going to clear them. So that is, and again, it's not the verdict of a trial. It is the decision on whether or not to indict. So this is the criminal case. And we'll continue to bring you more information on that. All right. The other things that we are looking at today, ladies and gentlemen, the Colorado Senate has gone from toss up to lean Democrat. Cory Gardner is in trouble. Even before this new classification that came in from Cook Political Report, and this is based on a number of surveys, even though there's a dearth of polling, there desperately needs to be some new polling coming out. But he was in trouble. He was kind of endangered and battled, however you want to describe it before. But the Supreme Court, these moves have been, I think that they have very much made him even more endangered, for the lack of a better way to put it. So this is another race, including that of Arizona, that race there with Martha McSally and Mark Kelly, that has been moved to, that's a lean Democrat. And the one that's in Arizona, I think it's still tossed up, but I think that's probably going to end up being lean Democrat as well. Alyssa Milano called 911 the other day. She's all about defunding the police. I mean, she's tweeted, defund the police, defund them, all kinds of stuff. But she called 911 reportedly because there was a teenager that was shooting squirrels with an air gun. Here's the report. Actress Alyssa Milano called police when she believed an armed gunman was on her Bell Canyon property in California on Sunday morning. At least seven Ventura County Sheriff's vehicles, one K-9 unit, a police helicopter, and one Los Angeles Fire Department team sat down the street on standby. It turned out it was a neighborhood teen with an air gun shooting at squirrels. Alyssa and her talent agent husband, Dave Bulgaleri, were also concerned that it may be someone stalking her. She lives in a multi-million dollar home in an upscale gated community. Sounds like she's got a wall around her house. I'm just going to put that out there. Interesting. But she's all about defunding the police, though. But, I mean, she's tweeted hashtag defund the police. But now it's defend me police. Huh. She was tweeting there. Some of the stuff that she's tweeted before, and she responded saying there was someone dangerous that was behind my home where I live with my two children. And yet most people don't live in a ritzy gated community like you do, though. So we have to rely on our own selves for protection, which you've apparently ignorantly and elitistly, which is a new word now, decide that you don't want to allow everyone else the opportunity to, you don't want to allow other people to empower themselves to protect their families. Yeah. So, hey, guess what? The police showed up and protected her. Giant hypocrite. Giant hypocrite. Rose McGowan went at her. I love Rose McGowan. Alyssa Milano is like, she's like a cut rate, equate Rachel McAdams from Mean Girls. She's just, yeah, just all hat, no cattle. Not even a lot of hat.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You won't miss any Dana shows by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So it was a short press conference there from the grand jury in the case of Breonna Taylor in Louisville. The announcement from the grand jury, Brett Hankinson, one of three officers charged with three counts of wanton endangerment, $15,000 cash bond, and the I know that the governor had activated the National Guard just about an hour ago. Three counts of wanton endangerment. Hankinson was one of three officers that was involved in that March shooting that in which Breonna Taylor was killed. A lot of discussion to have about this. Very interesting, but that's just the latest that just happened really while we were on break and ended while we were on break. So we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means here coming up, but I wanted to give you the latest in that. Additionally, Mike Bloomberg raising $16 million to buy the votes of former felons in Florida. How is that not vote buying? Bloomberg raising $16 million to allow former felons to vote in Florida. Now, here's the interesting thing about this. It's the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. One of the Supreme Court potentials there was on the Supreme Court, Lagoa, Florida, and went to the 11th, was one of the judge who wrote the opinion as it related to nonviolent offenders. Or was that? No, this is... nonviolent offenders being able to get the right to vote. Actually, this was, I might be conflating. Actually, I'm trying to go through my head because there's like a million different things happening right now. That was the Florida justice. So very interesting because the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, they're looking at former felons, nonviolent offenders. But Mike Bloomberg, I mean, that's $16 million. I know that there's been a lot of discussion as to how individuals vote when an initiative like this happens and it's re-enfranchised. And it would be, you know, it's kind of predictable how you think it would be. All right, coming up, we got the latest for you here on all of this coming out of Louisville right now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This portion of the Dana Show is brought to you by Caltech. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation. Performance. Caltech. Visit us at caltechweapons.com.
Count one. Wanton endangerment in the first degree. On or about March 13th, 2020, in Jefferson County, Kentucky, the above-named defendant, Brett Hankinson, committed the offense of wanton endangerment in the first degree when, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to human life, he wantonly shot a gun, into the apartment occupied by initials C.E. Count two, wanton endangerment in the first degree. On or about March 13th, 2020, in Jefferson County, Kentucky, The above-named defendant, Brett Hankison, committed the offense of wanton endangerment in the first degree when, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to human life, he wantonly shot a gun into the apartment occupied by initials C.N. Count 3, wanton endangerment in the first degree. On or about March 13th, 2020, in Jefferson County, Kentucky, the above named defendant, Brett Hankison, committed the offense of wanton endangerment in the first degree when, under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to human life, he wantonly shot a gun into an apartment occupied by initials ZF against the peace and dignity of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Mr. Foreperson, is that the decision of the grand jury?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, sir.
That's from the grand jury. They're indicting one officer out of three there in Louisville in the death of Breonna Taylor 6 months after this death. This was just actually right before our headline segment. Now, we are waiting for the Kentucky Attorney General press conference. He is expected to give a press conference. Actually, he's, according to what we had, he's running 7 minutes late. So he's expected at any point to give a press conference. The governor of Kentucky has called in the National Guard ahead of this the announcement of as to who they were going to indict and if they were going to indict and who they were going to indict. Now, there were three officers involved, and Brett Hankison is, as you heard from the grand jury there, three counts of first degree wanton endangerment. That is a felony charge. Now, you're probably wondering, what's the difference? What is wanton endangerment? What's the difference between, because you can have a first degree wanton endangerment, second degree wanton endangerment. One's a Class C felony. The other's a Class A misdemeanor. The wanton endangerment, according to the Kentucky state statute, quote, a person is guilty of wanton endangerment. This is first degree when under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life, he wantonly engages in conduct which creates a substantial danger of death or serious physical injury to another person. And that's their, again, their statute, section 508, subsection 60. And that's a Class D felony. You can be 5 years in prison for that. Second degree is a person is guilty of wanton endangerment, second degree, when they wantonly engage in conduct which creates a substantial danger of physical injury to another person. That's, again, a Class A misdemeanor, and you can be up to in jail for up to a year. And side note, he's charged with a first degree. He's charged with Class D felony, first degree wanton endangerment, three counts of that. Now, the other officers have not been charged. And so now there are, I think there's still, people are saying out of all of this, there's only a wanton endangerment charge. That's it. There's only a wanton endangerment charge. So I'm wondering, and we're going to hear from, and I'm pulling this up because there's background information on this that the Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron was apparently handing to the press, explaining how he was going to go about his investigation, and that they are, it says that the Attorney General's Office of Special Prosecutions was tasked with determining if there was a criminal violation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The officers involved, Jonathan Mattingly, Miles Cosgrove, and Brett Hankison. Hankison is the only one who has not been charged. Again, you just heard me read that off. That was three counts, first degree wanton endangerment. And they're looking at claims of civil negligence. They're looking with Kenneth Walker or Breonna Taylor. And then they're also looking at the narcotics case against Jamarcus Glover and the obtainment of the warrant for her home, because it was that warrant. And that's how. So they're going to be looking at all of that stuff. So this is some people were looking at I know the defense attorneys, it was reported they were looking at that. You know, how is the warrant? Is this, you know, legit, a valid warrant, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of stuff up there. So we're going to hear from the Attorney General at any point, and we will carry that because this is, I mean, it's a big deal from a number of angles. And there's a lot of information going out as to, you know, what she had to do with the warrant, what she was even out there for, et cetera, et cetera, how this all happened. But the big thing is, and I think that most everybody can agree on, is the situation of no-knock raids. And I just cannot wrap my mind around why we do them. And I'm sure that there's some people who can give some persuasive arguments. I have yet to be persuaded, and I've spoken to a number of people, including those in law enforcement. And there's some in law enforcement that I've spoken to who are not happy with them. They don't like them. And then others who think they're okay. But I say this most for anything, the protection of the officers involved, so you don't have to have cases like this. You show up to somebody's house in the middle of the night and you're breaking in their door. I'm going to tell you, especially in Texas, people are going to respond a certain way. It's usually involving lead. Just saying, you know, it's exactly high velocity lead projectiles. That's how people are usually going to respond. And so I also, as a firearm owner, I have that aspect of concern as it relates to this. And then there's also the incorporation of this tactic as it relates to red flag laws as well. So and I'm looking at all of this because this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of very interesting discussions, and some of it's going to go in the weeds as to all of this, because this is which is a good thing to finally be able to talk about no-knock raids and the like. But a lot of stuff. One of only, and again, I go back to the question that I had, the city of Louisville already had a $12 million settlement with her family before this was even, and so that's, I don't understand the process in that. So apparently the officers in the doorway, they were saying that they had a self-defense claim because they didn't fire first. So apparently that's the distinction, as to why they weren't indicted, right? And Hankinson was the only, he was the only one of them fired. They were apparently, when they were going through, they were in like a formation, when he fired, it was not considered, the way that I hear it being argued or put forward by the Taylor family attorneys, is it was not considered self-defense, you know, what he was doing, etc. And the others were behind the doorway. So all of this is going to come into play. So I'm very interested to hear what the attorney general has to say about all of this there for the state of Kentucky. But that's, if you're just joining us, that's what the governor of Kentucky called in the National Guard. They had the announcement from the grand jury in Louisville. They're indicting one of the three officers involved in the Breonna Taylor shooting. And it was three counts first degree wanton endangerment. So that's where we are. And we'll bring you updates as we get them. And as soon as this press conference kicks off, we will join it. I mean, they're running a little bit behind, but we'll bring you some of this so that you can get some insight. You're going to want to know some of this stuff. As we have some other topics as well, and later on in the program, we're going to talk with Glenn Jacobs. He's Knox County Mayor in Tennessee, and he was one of those who was asking some questions about this story that was going around as it related to Nashville and whether or not they were lying about the number of cases of coronavirus so as to keep bars closed. And it's weird because people keep going, oh, that's a fake story, but yet apparently they confirmed that these emails existed, so how is that a fake story? I have a million questions about this, and we're going to talk about that coming up as well. Also, a couple of other things that we're looking at, because we have some Marxist theory, critical race theory stuff, all of this. I saw this piece over at The Atlantic, and I got to share it. The Atlantic says, the fight against words that sound like but are not slurs. Did you read that one?
Well, there's a fight against it? Okay.
I don't know. They said that colleges are torn apart when faculty are punished and publicly vilified for accidentally giving offense. Okay. So the news, it started with the Marshall School of Business at the University of Southern California. They made news when they moved to get rid of a longtime professor from a class because he used a Mandarin word correctly in a lesson, but it sounded like a racial slur. And people got angry. And then they were told, in fact, during a Zoom class, one of the professors there told students that in business settings, they should not use filler words such as or And then he gave an example. And so the example that he gave was, and I'm not going to read it all out, but he goes, like, in China, you know, the common word is that. And he said, so it might, because it's a different language, sound entirely different, because the one that what they have that's apparently similar to that is starts with an N, like N-E-I, and then it, then there's a G in there, and it, and so apparently that was like something in Mandarin that was would be used as filler. And he's talking to business students who use Mandarin to engage in business discussions with Chinese businesses, and he's saying, don't engage in like filler discussion because it just looks like you're not prepared. And then he ended up, because it even so much as sounded like it, he ended up getting run out on a rail. So now, and I'm actually surprised the Atlantic didn't go, yeah, well, he needed to go anyway. They were saying that, well, maybe, you know, don't do that. Maybe don't, you know, don't say that. But at the same time, we can't go after people for not actually saying words that just sound like slurs, but they're not. This is where we are. This is 2020.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It's the Dana Show.
We are going to go to the press conference right now from the Kentucky Attorney General discussing the Breonna Taylor case. Those officers, one officer, three counts, wanton endangerment in the first degree. This is Daniel Cameron right now.
...of professional conduct from making public comments that could in any way prejudice this case as it moves forward. Each state has different rules about what prosecutors can and cannot say. The Kentucky rules are clear that I'm prohibited from making comments that could sway public opinion or heighten public condemnation of those involved in the case. These are crucial rules to ensure due process under the Constitution. When prosecutors prematurely release information about the case to the public, can risk justice by poisoning the jury pool, violating the accused's rights to a fair trial, and even jeopardizing the final verdict. The success of our legal system is predicated on the principle that the accused is innocent until proven guilty. Despite passions, opinions, and desire for every detail to be known, the rule of law must apply. Justice must be done. In the early morning hours of March 13th, officers from LMPD executed a search warrant at 3003 Springfield Drive, apartment 4. This was Miss Breonna Taylor's residence. The officers were advised by superiors to knock and announce their presence in serving this specific search warrant. The scope of our investigation did not include the obtainment of that warrant by LMPD's Criminal Interdiction Division. Federal law enforcement partners are conducting that investigation. Sergeant Mattingly and Detectives Cosgrove and Hankinson had no known involvement in the preceding investigation or obtainment of the search warrant. They were called into duty as extra personnel to effectuate the service of the search warrant. They only had information conveyed to them during their prior briefing. Evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. The officer's statements about their announcement are corroborated by an independent witness who was near in a proximity to apartment 4. In other words, the warrant was not served as a no-knock warrant. When officers were unable to get anyone to answer or open the door to apartment 4, the decision was made to breach the door. After breaching the door, Sergeant Mattingly was the first and only officer to enter the residence. Sergeant Mattingly identified two individuals standing beside one another at the end of the hall. a male and a female. In his statement, he says that the male was holding a gun, arms extended, in a shooting stance. Sergeant Mattingly saw the man's gun fire, heard a boom, and immediately knew he was shot as a result of feeling heat in his upper thigh. Kenneth Walker fired the shot that hit Sergeant Mattingly, and there is no evidence to support that Sergeant Mattingly was hit by friendly fire from other officers. Mr. Walker admitted that he fired one shot and was the first to shoot. In addition to all the testimony, the ballistics report shows that the round that struck Sergeant Mattingly was fired from a 9mm handgun. The LMPD officers fired 40 caliber handguns. Sergeant Mattingly returned fire down the hallway. Mattingly fired 6 shots. Almost simultaneously, Detective Cosgrove, also in the doorway, shot 16 times. This all took place in a matter of seconds. In total, 6 bullets struck Ms. Taylor. Medical evidence obtained by our team indicates that only one shot was fatal. Further medical evidence shows that Ms. Taylor would have died from the fatal shot within a few seconds to 2 minutes after being struck. Detective Hankinson fired his weapon 10 times, including from a outside sliding glass door and through a bedroom window. Some bullets traveled through apartment 4 and into apartment 3 before some exited that apartment. At the time, 3 residents of apartment 3 were at home, including a male, a pregnant female,
we are up against the end of this hour. Our next hour is on the way, and we'll have all of the latest with this case coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. I'm Dana Lash. Stay with us.
Bill O'Reilly here. The presidential election just weeks away, as you know. More than ever, folks need real analysis and honest facts, not speculation and partisan reporting. The traditional news and cable networks feed you biased coverage and skewed analysis 24 hours a day. The pundits parade around trying to score cheap shots, and the big media companies silence anyone who disagrees with them. Do you want Facebook or Twitter deciding what you see and hear? All that stops now with me, Bill O'Reilly, and my free podcast. Don't waste another minute of your time on the dishonest networks peddling fake news. Now you can listen to the O'Reilly Update and excerpts from my nightly no-spin news free. Search Bill O'Reilly wherever you listen to podcasts, and be sure to subscribe. Like you, I'm tired of the dishonest media. It's corrupt. Search Bill O'Reilly wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe now.
PD's Criminal Interdiction Division. Federal law enforcement partners are conducting that investigation. Sergeant Mattingly and Detectives Cosgrove and Hankinson had no known involvement in the preceding investigation or obtainment of the search warrant. They were called into duty as extra personnel to effectuate the service of the search warrant. They only had information conveyed to them during their prior briefing. Evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. The officer's statements about their announcement are corroborated by an independent witness who was near in a proximity to apartment 4. In other words, the warrant was not served as a no-knock warrant. When officers were unable to get anyone to answer or open the door to apartment 4, the decision was made to breach the door. After breaching the door, Sergeant Mattingly was the first and only officer to enter the residence. Sergeant Mattingly identified 2 individuals.
Oh, boy. So that is the Daniel Cameron. That's the Attorney General of the state of Kentucky. And he is discussing just then. He's still speaking. He's taking some he's saying that they're going to pursue the case. And he's speaking as to the announced indictment from the grand jury today of Brett Hankinson. And I'm made of questions on this. There's a lot of stuff to consider. Welcome to the show. I'm Dana Lash. Good to be with you today. And there's it's a busy news day. And goodness, this that and I think that that is a very interesting bit of information that the Attorney General was discussing just then, because the way, let me pull this up here. I've got a lot of stuff in front of me, so forgive me. The way that that they're, so it wasn't a no-knock warrant, which I don't like anyway. It wasn't a no-knock warrant. There's a lot of opinions on this. Now, I don't want to go through stuff that is not determined to be valid, unverified information. And there's a lot of that stuff out there. But I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions on this. And I, again, I like to be very careful with stuff like this, because as a law-abiding gun owner, I just know someone comes into my house at night, I'm going to react a certain way. And I know you would as well. So looking at this, let's, I got a couple things, because we're following the Supreme Court stuff and there's just all kinds of things to look at here. So just the rundown, the grand jury, Brett Hankinson charged with three counts, first degree wanton endangerment, and he is being held on a $15,000 cash bond. He's indicted for wantonly firing his gun into a couple of different apartments there, because he fired into the apportment in which Breonna Taylor's apartment, and then that went in to what the next, the apartment next door, 3A. And so I think the difference. They determined they couldn't actually, they determined that it was Detective Cosgrove who fired the fatal shot, which they also made the determination, the grand jury in discussing this, that it was self-defense. And that's why he isn't charged, but that might be why Hankinson isn't charged with murder or reckless homicide or something like that. I want to listen to some of these questions that the Attorney General Daniel Cameron here in Kentucky is taking from members of the press, because he's getting some questions from the press right now, and I would like to hear some of these. Let's see if we can pull that up for you. It's all live and happening right now. Here we go.
The law, the criminal law, is not adequate.
I think we have it. Or we'll get it.
These are secret, and so I'm not going to get into the specifics of details about that proceeding. What I will say is that we presented all of the information, and they ultimately made a determination about whether to charge. In this instance, they decided to indict Detective Hankinson.
One question.
Do you think state law needs to be changed?
I'm sorry, say that again.
When it comes to officers firing back in self-defense, do you think the current state law needs to be changed with cases like this?
Well, what my role as the special prosecutor in this case was to provide the information and facts to the grand jury. Detective Cosgrove and Sergeant Mattingly were justified in returning fire because they were fired upon. I'll leave it to others to make determinations. We have vigorous self-defense laws in this state, and that is something that existed prior to this case. I'll let others make judgments about that. Yes, sir.
One big question surrounding this case is whether or not the officers knocked and announced their presence. Talk about the evidence that you came to that they did announce their presence.
Yes, the statements that were made by officers there the night or the morning of March 13th show that they did knock and announce. The important point here is that information was corroborated by another witness who was in close proximity to apartment 4, who corroborated that information. And said that there was a knocking and announcing by the officers.
Was the witness a civilian or a law enforcement?
The witness was a civilian.
If a wanton endangerment takes place while there is a death involved, would that not be a manslaughter charge if there was a death that occurred during a wanton endangerment?
Well, Chris, to your question, I think it, again, is important to step back and recognize that what we did was uncover all the information and facts related to the morning of March 13th, and then provided that information to the grand jury. The grand jury had every piece of detail needed to make their assessment and their judgments.
And ultimately, their conclusion was that the decision needed to be made to indict Mr. Hankinson.
Mr. Cameron, Rukmini Kalimaki with the New York Times. Right here, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, two questions for you. Number one, you said that she was shot six times, yet her death certificate says five. Can you please explain the discrepancy? And the second thing is journalists in this room, myself included, have taken apart that apartment complex looking for witnesses to the point that you made about the knocking and announcing. Of a dozen witnesses that I spoke to, only one, a man who was directly upstairs, heard them announce. Do you think that's enough in the middle of the night when somebody is asleep for just one person in a tight-knit apartment block to have heard that? Is that a sufficient way of announcing?
Well, let me try to answer your second question first. Your question was, is it enough for me? I think the more pertinent question is, what was the evidence provided to the grand jury? What was sufficient for their purposes? They got to hear and listen to all the testimony and made the determination that Detective Hankinson was the one that needed to be indicted, knowing all of the relative points that you made. As to your first question, can you repeat it one more time?
Her death certificate says five, and yet you are saying six. Today's the first time I'm hearing six.
Yes. So there is a bullet that was lodged. And bullet might be too generous a term. There was an object that was lodged into
the... So this is Daniel Cameron, the AG of Kentucky, going through that. You might actually remember Daniel Cameron, who spoke at the RNC. And I think he's explaining it well. Let me walk through this with some of you, because I think I have the way that that they're going about these charges. So this is as I understand it. Now, I'm going to lay out facts that have been verified by local media, national media. I'm only going through the facts of things because I want to better understand this situation. So the way, if you're joining us as it comes down in Louisville, the grand jury has indicted one of the three officers involved in the March 12th shooting of Breonna Taylor, Brett Hankinson. Now, he's been charged with three counts of first-degree wanton endangerment. Now, they were going through the details that they used as the basis for determining this approach. They sent the weaponry, and they sent their guns, they sent the casings, all this stuff. They had two different labs look at it. One lab was inconclusive. The other lab came with the determination that it was Detective Cosgrove who ultimately fired the fatal shot that killed Breonna Taylor, which is why Hankinson, there isn't even a homicide charge for that. Now, the three counts of first-degree wanton endangerment on Hankinson are for the way in which he fired his gun into the apartment. One of the first things that you are taught when you are training with firearms is you not only know what you're shooting at, but you know what's behind your target. You know what is behind your target. And from all of the descriptors of Hankinson and his reaction, that wasn't this. And so I get the wanton. However, I understand that charge. And it was because, and he apparently fired his weapon 10 times. Some of the bullets went through the walls, and that's where the wanton, the endangerment comes in. I get that charge. Now, it's a tough one. I want everyone to realize that you have to be almost like, for the lack of a better way to describe this, absolutely clinical. You got to strip everything else out and look at simply the facts alone. Okay? That's how it's got to be. So I understand that particular charge there. So I want, why were they there in the first place? Because there was a lot of, in fact, I'll tell you this. It was the Courier Journal in Louisville that did a fantastic job in going through some of this. I've seen a number of these fact checks on different allegations in this case. And I think the Courier Journal, kudos to them. And they've got citations to last for days. Just want to add that. But they were asking, you know, they were looking at the question, why were the police there? And they looked at the claim that police were at the wrong apartment. They said that there was a lot of posts on this. And they said that the Courier-Journal obtained the copies of the search warrants that they used. And it was part of a narcotics investigation. There were five search warrants. One was for Taylor's apartment. Three were for adjacent homes on Elliott Avenue in the Russell neighborhood. One was for a house on West Muhammad Ali Boulevard. That warrant was not executed. The reason is not made public. The search warrant for, they were looking at the home and all of this. They said the search warrant for Taylor and her home explicitly identified her and her address because they were saying that they were at the wrong apartment. That claim is false. They said it was specifically, it was explicitly identified her and her address. Apparently it had her name and her social security number and her birth date listed on it because they were doing an investigation on Jamarcus Glover and Adrian Walker. And her name came up in along as part of that investigation. And so in an affidavit, one witness wrote that they had seen Glover get a package from Taylor's home and use Taylor's address on his own documents. So that's why police were at Taylor's home in the first place. And they, what they've discovered in this ongoing investigation is that, first off, Taylor was not shot while she was asleep in the bed. She was standing in the hallway. The first shots, Kenneth Walker fired first shots and police responded. So that's why Cosgrove is not being charged because it's, as you heard the AG say, it was self-defense. And that the officer who was shot was not hit by friendly fire. And they were going through this and it was the eight times that she was shot. It was, I think it was five gunshots. I mean, they went through everything. So as for this case, the way that they looked at it, they knocked because it wasn't a no knock. Apparently it was originally, and then that had been altered. And they knocked on the door and they announced themselves and then they used the battering ram. And then it was Walker that fired and then they had fired back. So all of this is, I mean, it's just all awful. The whole thing is awful. I do understand the wanton endangerment charges for Hankinson, though. I do. But all of this, you know, it's all bad. But the media, you know who's responsible for a lot of the noise? The media. They ran with the narrative she was shot and killed in her bed out for how long?
Hi, I'm Greg Corumbus. Join Jim Garrity of National Review and me each weekday on the 3-Martini Lunch as we dissect the day's good, bad, and crazy news. Each day, you'll get our original and fun insights into everything from presidential politics to the war on punctuation to Jim's hammering the media's pathetic efforts to turn Andrew Cuomo into a hero.
And he's got everything. He's got the personality. He's got the brother. He's got the charm. He's got the jokes. Greg, he's got everything except the actual success.
Subscribe to the 3-Martini Lunch at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Dana Show.
We ran long there because of that breaking news coming out of Louisville, Kentucky. But man, we're having some very interesting conversations, too, because I always say we have a breakdown in society, a breakdown in morality, a breakdown in ethics. And it comes because we have a plethora of godless homes and just individuals without virtue and without morals. And we expect to outsource the responsibility of this to the government, a godless government. And so when you have tragedies like this take place, it is a complete clash of this idea and the reality. That's what it is. So I wouldn't say it's a libertarian view. It's just a contradictory, contrarian view. I don't know. We got a lot still to discuss. And then here a little bit later on, we're going to talk to the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, about that story coming out of Nashville. Stick with us.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Missed anything from the show? Subscribe to Dana's Daily Podcast by subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back to the show, danalash.com. Subscribe to the newsletter because I'm going to go through. We've been following this breaking story coming out of Louisville. And Daniel Cameron, who is the AG there in Kentucky, is still taking questions from the press because the grand jury announced just a little bit ago, not even an hour ago, the indictment of Brett Hankinson, one of the three officers in the shooting death there of Breonna Taylor. And it's three counts of first degree wanton endangerment. And they determined that one of the other officers, Detective Cosgrove, was the one who actually fired the fatal shot. And there's a lot of discussion about the warrants and everything else. It's not a shut, an open and closed case just because of all of the information about the warrants, because they weren't for her. It was, they were looking at her property because it was involved in an investigation with two other individuals that they were investigating. And they did determine, what they did announce was that it was not a no-knock warrant. It was a knock. But still, I mean, I'm made of questions, and we're going to talk more about this. One of the other things that we're following, too, is this story. And I have to tell you, I'm a little ticked off at the way that the media has been handling this. This situation, the story in Nashville that we were first talking about, and this was just, what, a couple of days ago that we were talking about this story. So the crux of this is that there was a story about how bars in Nashville, which are still closed down, that the some emails and discussion between city officials were noting, they were acknowledging the small number of coronavirus cases originating in bars, comparing it with like nursing homes, which were sky high, and really discussing how it didn't really justify the closure of these bars. Long story short, the story was that city officials were lying to everybody about the number of coronavirus cases originating in bars to justify the continued closure of bars. And it went crazy. And the Tennessean looked into it. All the Tennessee Lookout looked into it. Everybody was looking into this. And so here's what, and we're going to bring on my friend and guest here in just one second on this. So one of the affiliates there, Fox 17, went and looked at it, and they were trying to say that the story is false because the emails were cherry-picked. Yet the emails say what they said, and city officials already said, admitted that they were emails in which they were discussing this stuff with each other. So what's the story on this, for this? And, of course, on the mask holes that are running us all ragged. Our very good friend, and you guys know him, but I know him as Glenn Jacobs. Oh, I mean, I know him, you know, what he used to do, too. Knox County Mayor there in Tennessee. It's always, Glenn, it's always so good to see just a face of reason and hear a voice of reason, because it's just, it's like the end of the world, you know, it's like a fire hose. And this situation with the masks, which I'm going to ask you about, because they were trying to get sassy with you. I saw local media was getting sassy with you on this. What's the real story here? Because it seems like, I don't believe that it's a false story because an email was cherry picked. I mean, you cannot take what was written by city officials in an email with their own hands out of context.
Right. Well, Fox 17 took that story off their website, and I believe they retracted it. What had happened was the statistics had been shared months before, evidently. So you know, they took it off their website and made an apology, but then really the broader issue is this, and constitutionally more important issue, is the fact that, okay, you have like 22 cases in bars. Mm-hmm. And then you have like 1,000 cases that can be traced to construction sites. So you shut down the bars.
Yeah.
Okay. A federal judge in Western Pennsylvania, of course, just struck down the Governor Wolf's executive order in Pennsylvania, saying that it violated the 14th Amendment, the due process and equal protection under the law clause. Well, now you're arbitrarily saying we're going to shut down your business, which, because they pose a threat to public health. You have 22 that we can trace here. You have 1,000 here, so we're shutting you guys down. So you have 22. You have 1,000 over here, and you know it's early on. You can see where, okay, we don't have the data and can't prove these things, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But now the data is starting to come in, and you know, I think that the problem is that they're cherry picking, you know, what they're going to do. And this really all started when we started saying this business is essential and this business is non-essential. Right. And the government can determine who gets to stay open and who doesn't get to stay open, you know, and what criteria we use for that. And it's just opened up a hodgepodge of all these different constitutional issues. And of course, I think that municipalities around the country are in states and counties and cities, they're going to be facing lawsuits and constitutional questions and issues for years to come because of all this. And what's happened in many cases, you know, is there it's conjecture by experts who are saying, well, we think this is the case, but then the data doesn't always back it up. But, you know, the policymakers are still saying, well, this is what we have to do because what the experts say. And constitutionally, that's very problematic.
I think you bring up a really good point, because in the beginning, before we didn't know anything about it, I mean, it could I still disagreed with their eminent domain of the seizure of generating income. But at least they could make a better case for it. Because they could say, well, we really don't know. We suspect. We're looking at, you know, how what the level of contagion's like, you know, the shedding, all of this stuff. But now, okay, well, so construction sites, and they can stay home. Nursing homes are operating the same that they were. But bars, which really have compared to all of these other things, are just like the least dangerous. That seems, is it just optics so that they can show the public that they look like they're doing something about it and getting a handle on it?
Part of it is you're trying to change human behavior. You know, and they're saying that when people congregate at bars and they drink and they don't do the things that we want them to do, and certainly we understand that, at the same point in time, you have to be able to prove that that is a threat to public health.
Right.
You have to have a rational basis for a law or a regulation. And once you start seeing that that may not be the case, that's when it's like, well, we really need to rethink this. Okay. Mm-hmm. But yes, part of it is this idea that COVID-19 is dangerous. None of us have ever said it's not. At least I haven't. You know, I think we all realize that. But you have public health officials who are out there thinking that if we just keep on pushing that, you know, people are going to get it and they're going to do what we want them to do.
Right.
And I do think that that's part of the underlying issue here.
No, I think, yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, people have, you know, you can have reasonable concern for sure. I mean, just like you would have reasonable concern about anything, and you go off the facts as they're given. But there's a huge difference between being reasonably concerned based on scientific evidence and then just going Chicken Little, the sky is falling crazy, and end up hurting a lot more people as a result of, I don't want to say over precaution, but overreaction maybe, that isn't science based. Because we love science. Science is great. It helps us figure stuff out. But, you know, that their response there. So was it, I mean, what is the basis? I mean, should they just reopen the bars and kind of go like for like do what Texas is doing? I think we're at 75% capacity for restaurants. And our bars are still kind of closed down. But in other areas like Florida, they're approaching it.
The mayor of Nashville, actually, I'm sorry, Davidson County, it's their metro community. Mm-hmm. Mayor Cooper actually just asked the governor for $82.6 million in additional federal funding. You know, the federal government has sent money out to the states, then, which is passed on to the cities and counties. And he asked for $82.6 million additional. Of course, that means that, like my county, Knox, mm-hmm. won't get as much because that there's a pie there that he's wanting a bigger piece of.
I'm not going to suggest that you have like a ring match because you would win that. I'm not going to suggest that, but going to say if there was a way to fight it out.
Sure. The governor responded that what Metro Davidson, Nashville is doing is not aligned with what the state is doing and what the governor wants to see. So basically the governor said, you need to start opening things back up. And they have. They're taking some of their restrictions off, which is a good thing. Here in Knox County, we have a Board of Health. I sit on the Board of Health, but that's all the Board of Health. Actually, their regulations supersede County Commission, which is something that we've been dealing with because great people on the Board of Health, but it is an unelected body which is making policy for Knox County that supersedes County Commission and my authority as well. Right. They implemented an 11 o'clock curfew on bars and restaurants, but still that's much more lenient than we see in many places across the country.
Yeah, even that's weird because the virus doesn't, well, guys, we're going to get more contagious after 11 o'clock.
Right. And I was able to get them to push that back from a 10 o'clock curfew, which is originally what was proposed.
Right.
You know, we have some restaurants because they stop all alcohol sales around Knox County within an establishment. And a lot of our restaurants that serve beer and wine or might have bars in them, they stay open until 11 on Friday and Saturday night. So I was able to get them to push that back until 11. And most of it was, you know, what their concern was the bars that were close to the campus, the University of Tennessee. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where they're trying to kind of tailor a policy that's going to hit everyone. So, you know, here in Tennessee, we were one of the first states to reopen. I think that overall, we're in a much better position than a lot of states around the country are. Governor Lee has done a great job in that respect of keeping our economy going. And, you know, that puts us in Tennessee, I think, in a much better position to bounce back from all of this
right.
than certainly a lot of states, especially the governors who went nuts and just completely locked everything down and are still locking things down at this point.
Yeah, that makes it very difficult, especially in some of these areas. They were not in the best financial position to even weather this in the first place, whereas, you know, Tennessee was, and Knox County for sure was. How are folks in your area, how are they handling everything with the social distancing and the masks? And I ask this because I have to bring this up. I saw an article about you. 10 News, very serious stuff here. Mayor Glenn Jacobs is promoting Constitution Day with book reading at elementary school. It's all well and good until they asked, where's your mask? He was seen without a mask at the elementary school. He should have worn the mask. A lot of quotes from a lot of different people about masks. And ultimately, I mean, it was weird. They said that, well, he looks like he's physically distanced, but I mean, you were more than 6 feet away. So,
yeah.
I mean, I would imagine if you were right there, you'd have a mask on.
I walked into the school wearing a mask. I wore a mask the whole time. I was speaking, and the school told me that it was fine if I removed my mask. And, you know, no one was around close to me. The kids were probably 20 feet away. But it makes for one heck of a photo op. And now, of course, with, you know, the virtue signaling and shaming and all those sort of things, you know, I'm really saddened because it feels like so much of this. It's not about health.
Right.
It's not about a virus. It's about a political agenda. And, you know, and we see that. We see that nationwide. And again, you know, COVID-19 is a serious issue, but we cannot give up the liberties that the Constitution guarantees and protects, because that sets a tremendously terrible precedent going forward. We are going to have more emergencies in this country. We all know that. And if we say, government, you can do anything at all that you need to do to protect us, well, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, amen to that. Well, and I appreciate, by the way, you noted the optic. I actually do think it made a good optic, because you're talking about Constitution Day and everyone could see your mouth and see what you were saying, and you didn't have your face covered, and you did the social distancing. I would have thought it was weird if it had been and you were promoting Constitution Day. One last quick thing for you. We're talking with Mayor Glenn Jacobs of Knox County, Tennessee, on all of the stuff that's happening. One of the things that I know I've heard from a lot of listeners who listen around the country and people who watch via Pluto, that no one, at least I can speak for myself and a lot of people out there, I don't think we're not against wearing masks, and we're not against being considerate of other people's health. It's being against government mandates to do so. And that's made a lot of people nervous, particularly as it relates to the issue of voting. And some people are wondering, are we going to have to wear a mask to vote? And what happens to the individuals who, you know, if they're asthmatic or they have other issues where they legitimately actually can't? And I'm sure that there are fewer of those than not, but still it is an issue. And then it becomes a question of, well, if the government can make you do this to go and exercise a constitutional right, what other requirements can it put upon you?
Yeah, that's a huge question, isn't it? Because this is not, you know, this is different. Normally government says you can't do something. In this case, you have to take a positive action just to breathe in public. Just to breathe in public. And again, you know, I'm with you, and I'm not anti-mask, and I've been branded that. But I'm certainly not. And, you know, when it comes to COVID-19, we do have a vulnerable population. We know what that is. It's people who are older and people who have compromised immune systems and those sort of things, you know. So I'm actually probably much more strict about, you know, what should they do? You know,
right.
They really need to protect themselves. But for the rest of us, you know, I understand that people can can be carriers and that they can inadvertently transmit it. I certainly understand that. And again, that goes back to, you know, if you're one of those people, you also have to exercise responsibility not to put yourself in that situation. Your loved ones have to make sure that they're not putting you in that situation. But we've gone really a step beyond that in saying that, you know, everybody has to take this positive action in order just to interact with each other. Yeah. And I can't find a constitutional basis for that. And I also, again, when you're looking at precedents, well, what's next? I mean, what happens during the next emergency? And people might think I'm an alarmist, but 6 months ago, did you think that the government would be demanding that everybody wears masks everywhere they go, or that they can just shut down businesses, or they can do all these things? Yeah. You know, so what happens when the next emergency comes along? And we don't know, but now we set the precedent that, hey, government, you can just do all this stuff, and there's literally no limitations on your authority over us as individuals.
That's right. Yeah, it's not in there. There's no constitutional basis for it. It's right next to where the wishes are in the Constitution. Yeah.
It's the nine wishes.
Yeah, that's right next to the wishes clause. Always good to see you, Mayor Glenn Jacobs, Knox County, Tennessee. God bless you. We appreciate what you do. Appreciate your voice out there. And obviously, I'm sure the people in Knox County appreciate your smart leadership at this time of all times. Good to see you, my friend.
Thanks, Dana. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Take care. We have more to come, folks. We have Today in Stupidity on the way as well. Make sure you sign up to that newsletter because I'll have the latest on this Taylor case, too. As we get moving on, y'all know that I love me some small business, the engine of our economy. And I was just heartbroken to read about how a huge, significant portion of small businesses have closed their doors permanently as a result of this lockdown. So we want to take the time to give those individual businesses who don't have the budget to do national radio ads to do so on this show. I'm actually wearing their shirt right now. My friends over at Patch Ops. And I actually just didn't even think about it. I put this shirt on because I like it and it's comfortable material and I wanted to wear it. Patch Ops, they're one of the first businesses to be a part of this. PatchOps.com/Dana. They make high quality PVC morale patches for everybody out there. It's owned and operated by Marine veteran Tim Hickey and his wife Michelle. And they supply the highest quality morale patches and vinyl decals, t-shirts, all kinds of stuff at an affordable price. They have brilliantly talented artists on staff. They are amazing, by the way. And this stuff is such high quality. We're doing stuff with them. That's how great they are. Tim and Michelle, they serve all police, military, Second Amendment advocates, everybody. And they also are very involved with homeless and veterans. They work with Sub-Zero Mission, the veteran coordinator. That's what Tim does. He's a volunteer, Mission 22 ambassador. And Michelle works for Vets for Child Rescue to stop human trafficking and child sex trafficking through their platform. So you have to check out patchops.com/Dana. Amazing company, USA, veteran owned, great stuff. And they continue serving the community. Patchops.com/Dana.
It's the Dana Show.
Oh, it's getting heated in Louisville, Kentucky. We'll have the latest on that for tomorrow. And we're also going to talk about Joe Biden getting mad because he's getting grilled on Hunter Biden, his son. Now, can you imagine all the media? They made up all these stories about Donald Trump Jr. Nothing. Here, Hunter Biden's the one who actually did it, and they're defending him. We'll have all of that tomorrow. Pray for Louisville. Louisville, God bless y'all. Back with you tomorrow.
It's the Dana Show.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.